Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. Today I'm going to be reading the article and additional explanation on Tracing Reality, the Visionary Quest to Wisdom, which is another etymological breakdown relating to reality, consciousness, tracing reality, vision, seeing, and wisdom, which is related to right action. This was published on the 7th of December, 2014. I just want to make an introductory note first. Since I have been delving into Trivium for a large part of last year, more deeply, reading Sister Miriam Joseph's book and understanding and getting into Gene Odening's material more than I had previously gone in 2010, I haven't looked back into the Trivium because I understood how the general processes worked. But understanding the power of the origin of symbols and how it comes as a reflection of reality in order to understand reality and communicate about reality. So reality is the base foundation through which symbols are derived, and then we can communicate about them and derive knowledge from reality, and that knowledge is put into symbols, and then we communicate about that. And also the metaphor and analogy as an origin in our ability to discourse and have dialogues about reality. The mythopoeic narratives and stories through analogy and metaphor. It helps to understand how we make reference to things through other things, and we often don't talk about the things in themselves because we have understandings of other things, and we always create correspondences and analogies and try to relate them. So there's always an attempt to apply as above, so below to different things, the law of correspondence, and see how they relate, and similarities and differences. This is part of judgment and discerning reality, diagnosing reality, assessing and evaluating. So a lot of our thinking is done in metaphor and analogy. So with metaphor, it can bring us to help us relate to aspects of reality or ourselves, to try to bring us to a familiarity or a comfortable understanding of ourselves or reality. And oftentimes the metaphors can be faulty. It can seem accurate because we're comparing things to another and trying to assess certain qualities or attributes or characteristics and correlating them, corresponding them. But as I say, the metaphor can be faulty because, again, we're trying to relate one thing in reality through another. But sometimes the analogy and the metaphor, the correspondence, isn't actually correct. It's only a loose correspondence. It's a creative imagination of how they can relate. For us to understand reality more, one thing in relation to another, because that's how the universe is. The existence and reality is the universe. The variability, diversity, and multiplicity of everything in the universe has an interrelation. Everything is relative to another in position, even in the bigger components, in the macro or the micro, the relative components in the micro quantum world allow locality from non-locality and develop into certain coordination and arrangement of component parts, develop into larger complexity, which develops emergent properties, and on as it goes into atoms, well, the subatomic particles, and then atoms. From the field, subatomic particles to atoms, and then we have molecules, and let's say for air, that's an all matter, and then you have, we'll get to animals, so you'll have the organic aspect of cells, and then the body, and then we have that individuated aspect, and then you also have bigger parts of matter. So you have different components of matter conglomerating, and you have a planet. And then on the planet, well, you have an emergent property is you have an atmosphere, and gravity forms because it's a certain mass and energy, and gravity is there. But ultimately, it's all based on everything that we understand from reality is based in reality. So metaphors can be limiting, and oftentimes we use metaphors to try to make sense of things, and it can provide us with a framework to model ourselves and reality, but it might not be completely accurate. So in my work, when I talk about things related to consciousness, where we can see it from our own expressions and we can relate it and understand it, like thoughts, emotions, and actions. Well, those are words that were created to describe things in reality, such as our thoughts and the emotions, and we have feelings and we have actions and behaviors. So words describe things in reality. If you're going to use a metaphor to relate things, sometimes it can be faulty. So the things that don't exist in reality that we imagine, such as, well, the what I've been calling the transcendental aspects of being is another analogy. It's a term to relate to something that is not itself existent and is beyond certain individuals. They're like universals. They're not universals in terms of man, a human, or animal, which are universals related to the within the physical as part of their as a characteristic, as an aspect that doesn't exist, because an animal or a human doesn't exist in itself. It's a person that belongs to that class, to that category. So they're categorizations of universals that are within the things that exist. The particularized aspects of reality contain the universals. Now, there's other types of universals that we can relate to, such as truth, love, good, right, morality. They don't exist in themselves in our reality. It's not like, oh, there's the object good, there's the object truth, there's the object of love, and there's the object of right, and there's the object of morality. But these things are expressive in non-tangible ways through us, through things in reality. So if you take good, well, if you want to imagine, if you go through causality to a prime source, say you go through science of the Big Bang and the singularity, well, that's energy. And energy, you think of the quantum field below the subatomic particles. Everything is a field. There's fields and fields, a bunch of different fields. And then you have the subatomic particles and the atomic particles and atoms and molecules, etc. I have a diagram of that scale in matter and energy in metaphysics, reality and language, fundamentals of the Trivium method, if you want to check that out. I believe it's image 17 or 18. But so the point I'm getting at is we can try to figure things out. So we go to a prime cause, a prime mover. Science goes back and looks, oh, Big Bang, theoretical, and then singularity, theoretical. And then we can relate this to what we've understood about quantum energy and the fields within fields and different fields fluctuating and interconnecting, and then that creates subatomic particles, etc., etc., as it progresses in scale and complexity and emergent phenomenon. Now, this is what I've been talking about recently. This is my understanding about how all reality functions, is that from a base energy layer, so you'd have the first seven dimensions of the total 11 dimensions. Now, they are the base. They are higher frequency, but they are lower. And they're more basic, less complexity. It's all energy. And then as you go up, the energy coalesces, or the fields coalesce into subatomic particles, which still have the dualistic properties of the field and particularization in material reality. But as you go up in complexity, the properties, the non-locality transforms into a locality whereby things exist and they remain permanent. They don't fluctuate in terms of energy and matter. So more complexity, more emergent phenomenon, matter, and then you have different things like plants, and then eventually you get to animals that can express consciousness, because the emergent property through the physiology of a matter object allows for the emergence of consciousness through electrochemical processing in the seat of the brain. Without a brain, there is no consciousness. Period. End of line. Everyone knows that. Everyone should know that by now. In terms of reality, the reality we live in, what we define as consciousness, as I've already defined in partially in axioms, existence, consciousness, and identity, and as I will define more here through the etymology. The etymologies are about words, the true meaning of words, as they reflect reality, so that the words are based on reality. And consciousness is seen through reality. It's not seen anywhere else. You cannot experience consciousness if you don't exist. And there's the so-called entities and other energy beings. I have no, as I've mentioned in other places, I have no direct experience to that, but other people say it exists. I don't know if they're, you know, what's happening, but so there's other entities that exist in other fields of energy. They don't exist in our reality. They're not physical, but they're entities. They have identities in their reality. That's how they exist. Now, in our reality, we exist this way. And there might be a way for higher frequency vibratory energies, which does not mean that they're higher beings. It just means that they vibrate at a higher frequency because they're non-physical. Because physicality, the larger things get when you go up from the energy. So you'd have just the field, and the field itself is the highest frequency vibration. And then you get to the subatomic particles, and then the atoms, matter. And as you keep progressing higher, the frequency slows down. And then eventually it slows down enough that it's no longer a pure frequency of energy. It becomes solid. It becomes matter. And it's physical. It's really physical. It's not just everything's energy and there's no physicality. No. The energy underlies the physicality, has a higher frequency rate of vibration, but it's lower in the scale of complexity. It's lower in the scale of evolution. Pure energy is not evolution. It is devolution. Pure energy is the implicate order. Now, if you look into David Bohm's work, which is was a pupil, a prodigy of Albert Einstein, David Bohm explained it in terms of the implicate and the explicate order. Now, the implicate order would be the first seven dimensions, and the explicate order would be time and space, where we live in the 4D. Everything that we can come to understand about ourselves and reality is within the 4D. The seven dimensions are not where we live. The seven dimensions are foundational aspects of reality, which are based in energy. So the other dimensions, I don't know if they have physicality. Honestly, I don't think so. I haven't looked into the 11-dimensional theory and how it works in the math, but as I understand it, the only place that there is physicality is in the three dimensions with time, which allows movement and things to exist. Without time, there's nothing existing. Now, this relates to what I'm talking about as energy being nothing in terms of entropy, because in the implicate order, what you'd have it's still an order where normally we view order and chaos, but it's actually two types of order, or the normal order in the four dimensions of space and time is an order of grouping. Now, this is where things coalesce and you have components and arrangements and coordination of the components that coalesce and produce new things, greater complexity. So the field to the subatomic, to the atomic, molecular, to matter, and biological, and then organic animals, etc. So things progress in complexity. because they group together. So you see, you have components that arrange and coordinate into groupings. This is why it's called the grouping order. And this is the explicate order where we live in the 4D. This is how things work in our universe. This is how things are constructed everywhere. You want to understand reality? That's how things work. You want to understand how language gets created? That's how things work. You want to understand programming? Go look at programming. That's how things are constructed from smaller units to bigger units. The smaller units may be the foundation, but it's not the end goal. It's the beginning. The end goal comes with greater complexity and greater evolution, which is why the four dimensions we live in is towards the end game, is the pinnacle. It's the tip of the spear. Now the foundation, the other seven dimensions, that's the implicate order, because it is a symmetry order. This is what I'm talking about when I say the pure energy is devolution, because that's where things started. It's not where you go back to. That's just a concept we have to try to make sense of reality, because people invent metaphors and narratives and stories in order to try to make sense of things. This is why I'm making this introduction, to make this clear to people. This is what I've been discovering since my research into the Trivium. In order to understand how we make sense of reality, we invent words and symbols to reflect them, but we also, through our imagination, create metaphors in order to reference things to other things, things we do understand to things we don't understand. So we're trying to understand things we don't understand through things we do understand, but it's not a perfect correlation. So when we make analogies and metaphors, we can get lost in pure belief and believe it's real even though it's not real. But because we made an analogy and a metaphor that sounds right, it feels good, it gives us a comfort, a security, it removes the discomfort, the insecurity, and the doubt of not having an answer to a question, of not understanding something. So when you complete a picture, you make a wholeness, and then it gives you a sense of understanding and a sense of security, rather than doubt, and the unknown produces fear. This is a common aspect of human psychology. The unknown does produce fear. So it's all based in psychology of why we like to believe things, even though there's no proof. We reference it to other things we understand, or that maybe we just think we understand. And this creates a convoluted web, a causal relation from concept to concept to concept, where maybe originally one thing was accurately founded in reality, but then as we progress, it's like the telephone line analogy, where communication of a message, unless there's strict rules, where you just correlating it and you're representing it the best way you can. So you represent a concept through another concept, and then through another concept, and then another concept later, and eventually you get lost in a haze of analogies and metaphors, and it just ends up being belief that's only loosely tied to reality. This is the problem with much of how we communicate about things in reality, when we don't look at reality itself or the object itself, and we try to make reference to things and reference to other things. Now this is perfectly fine in terms of stories and narratives and symbolism to correlate aspects of things that we cannot actually define, which is why I was talking about truth, love, morality, good, right, etc., as an aspect of transcendental being. It's I can't prove transcendental being. These are only all these words: truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, are things that we can see. So everything that exists, well, that's a truth. Love as an emotion, you know, doesn't exist. It's an attribution of value that we have through our experience of reality, and then we attribute emotions and feelings to it, physiological responses through our thoughts and our meaning about certain things. So that's the basic love. But love in the higher aspect is our expansion of consciousness through our awareness of reality, conscious awareness. And that's the force of love that expands consciousness, because it's related to truth and reality, because reality is truth, right? So how do you expand and evolve consciousness? By gaining conscious awareness of reality. There's no other way. People want to believe they're doing it by meditation. Bullshit, you're just in a fantasy land. It does help for certain things, but it's not going to make you just automatically evolve consciousness. That comes from conscious awareness of reality. Why? Because reality is truth. So you want to increase the ability to process and understand reality, will gain more of reality, and your neuronal network will create more connections and more understanding of reality, and you will evolve consciousness because you are evolving your connections in reality, and that will reflect itself in your brain, which is responsible for the generation of consciousness as we experience it in our reality. Go look into facts of reality. Consciousness is directly related to the brain. And the old brain, the old consciousness as being received in the brain like a radio or television, that's a fallacious analogy. You just have to go look into it more, as I've been doing. So I'll just go back to the implicate order to finish that. The implicate order is everything spaced apart, and it's a symmetry order where everything is just broken down into basic pieces, and everything's just evenly spread apart in a symmetry. It's just pure, everything is everywhere, evenly displaced, and evenly everywhere. And since there's nothing existing, there is no time, there's nothing moving, it's just fields, there's nothing. That's entropy. Another way you could look at entropy is completely frozen in stagnation, where if you had the universe and you removed time, and all you had was the three dimensions of space, that is entropy, because there's nothing moving as well. Entropy can be looked at as absolute zero. You can look into this as well. Minus 273 degrees Kelvin, I think it is. If everything was frozen, you'd have no movement, and that's entropy, when nothing moves. Because with movement, interaction, even at the subatomic level, then you get to the atomic level, and you know, everyone thinks of matter as dead, but matter has chemical reactions. It's not dead. That's what produces, that's how electrochemical reactions happen in our body. And we're alive, and we come from matter. Matter is what produces the emergent phenomenon, the emergent property of consciousness. Without matter, we have no consciousness in reality. There is no consciousness to experience reality without matter, without a body for consciousness to come from. So my point is, when you look at etymology, it all traces back to reality as it is. You have to understand reality to understand, to get knowledge, and then you can develop symbols to communicate that knowledge about reality. And this is how everything starts from basic blocks. And when you have the seven dimensions, that's the basic energy levels of our universe that produce the four material levels. And this is at the forefront, so which is why the seven basic levels of higher frequency is not higher evolution. It's just a higher frequency of lesser complexity. It's a devolution. That's not the direction we're supposed to go towards. I'm not saying we're supposed to go towards more denser and denser vibrations of energy. I'm saying that's how matter is produced from the implicate order, from the other dimensions, and then it produces our physicality. And below that is the energy. And so it's foundational, but it's not higher. It's only higher in frequency. And that's why if you understand metaphors, you can see how we can just reference things in terms of other things. And then, well, then spirit becomes higher because it's a higher frequency. And then we think, oh, well, that's the better thing, right? And then matter is lower because it's lower vibration. So matter is good is high, and spirit is high, and the sky is high, and the air elements is high. So that's the good is the spirit. And then the matter, well, that's low and that's evil. But these are just metaphors and symbolism in order to understand aspects of reality that are not existent in themselves, such as good and evil. This is why they are the transcendental aspects of being. Because in reality, so conceptually, in reality, those things do not exist in themselves. Just as the form, human, or the animal, which doesn't have a form itself, human doesn't have a form itself. We have variations of a basic blueprint of human, and then there's variations. So that's why you get the idea of the morphogenetic field that is responsible for providing forms in a metaphysical sense of a universal that is not seen, that can provide information in order to produce what is seen, which is physicality, the bodies we have. So maybe there's a morphogenetic field for all forms in existence. I don't know. It's a theory to explain things. But the transcendental aspects of being, truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, etc., whatever else you want, beauty, etc., but beauty is what we create, and it's in the eye of the beholder. Without consciousness to see, there is no, you could say, well, beauty is everywhere. Well, it's a word to describe something because we have consciousness to describe it. You know, if there was no humans, would there be truth? Well, there would be things existing, but would there be anyone to call it truth? Would there be the ability for the power of love as an expansive force of consciousness in order to gain conscious awareness of reality? Well, no, that wouldn't exist either, because there would be no conscious awareness of reality in order for the expansive force of love to be even occurring. And the same for good. Good is a default state. So if you look at pure awareness as a concept for the source consciousness, the simple I that we anthropomorphize, personify, and project onto that experience, that individual internal experience of I awareness, and you can't understand it in any other reference than yourself, because you yourself are having that experience. So it's you put the I onto that experience because it's only in relation to you. It's not in relation to someone else. You know, that's the you consciousness. No, it's being experienced inside of you only. When you go into the meditative or the psychedelic, hallucinatory, whatever, altered state of mind, and you experience just you shed your ego personality identity construct that's from the conditioning of your existence from birth to death. You shed that and you dissociate from that identity, from your actual identity in physical materiality that was produced through existence in reality. You shed that away, and that's the quote ego death and the quote killing the ego temporarily in order for you to experience so-called, you know, transcendental awareness, which would just be pure awareness. The pure awareness is the same in everybody because it's the same thing. It's not an actual I. That is a personification. It's a projection of ourselves through our experience, through our own subjective experience. If there wasn't the subjective experience to experience that pure awareness, that pure, quote, consciousness, which isn't human consciousness, it's just pure consciousness that doesn't have any reference to reality or existence or anything. It's just pure awareness, pure consciousness. It doesn't have any interaction with anything. It's just pure awareness. And you reference that as an I, but it's not I, you, because you're only in that subjective inner state that can reference things through you, so that's why you call it I. That's the source I. But that's not you. That's everyone. It's everything, conceptually, if you want to look at that as the source. Because when we look at our bodies and we are energy, when you look at our bodies and everything is energy, everything has energy at every level. The matter has energy. Chemical processes involve energy interchange and produces new things. And that's in all of matter, even in lifeless matter. There's chemical processes occurring. A fire doesn't have life, but it has chemical processes occurring. And there's motion in everything because atoms are all moving, so everything's in motion. Everything's active. Everything's alive. You could look at it that way. Like everything in the universe is alive. Everything has consciousness. But these are all metaphors, is what I'm getting at. They're metaphors to analogize things about things we can understand in the macro level of our own experience. We can't experience the quantum level. It's not our reality. The fields at the quantum level do not affect our body organization. They don't affect our minds. And this is why the brain, as a quote TV radio receiver for consciousness, doesn't hold up, because if consciousness was a thing that was like a field or force, we would be able to measure it entering the body. We'd be able to measure it exiting the body at death. But this doesn't happen because consciousness is actually an emergent property, as I've been explaining in my previous audios. The emergent property, just like when you program something, just like how matter, molecules, atomic, atomic particles, subatomic particles, the field energy, well, that all produces emergent properties and all builds up. And when you know programming, zeros and ones lead to greater complexity. And then you develop programming languages. There's a bunch of programming languages, but they're all based on zeros and ones, but they operate differently. And then from there, you can create greater complexity. So the point is, with greater complexity, you have eventually an emergence of consciousness. Now you can look at this conceptually as, well, the Big Bang from the singularity. The singularity is just pure energy. You look at the body, ourselves. We are energy. In order to have consciousness, you have to have energy in the body. You can shock someone and kill them so they don't have energy in their body. It's going to dissipate. And then you can shock them again and bring them back to life because it's related to energy in our body. So that's why we relate consciousness to energy, because we actually do require energy in our bodies, in our electrochemical processing. That's how the brain communicates with the body. It's consciousness is a whole body thing. We have our thoughts, which we say originate in our mind, in our head, in our brain, etc. And then we have our emotions, and that's, you know, the quote heart, but it's actually still related to the brain as well, and it has physiological responses. And there is the heart brain cells, and then there's the stomach brain cells and our guts, and so our actions and will and courage, and yellow belly is when you're a coward. So there's all these metaphors and analogies and correspondences. It's not the literal heart that's doing the feeling and the emoting. It's all still happening in the brain that's processing all of reality and allowing us to have thoughts and meaning in order to have physiological reactions, because we're processing reality, even if we're not. There's a lot of conscious, and then there's subconscious or unconscious processes, but they all relate to processing reality because it's all based in reality. So consciousness is an emergent phenomenon from reality, from our experience. But then we like to anthropomorphize, personify, and project that into other aspects. So we create God, and that's the pure consciousness. But these are all just conceptions. So if you go back to the Big Bang, to the singularity, well, that's looked at as just energy. So when we look at consciousness in the body and we relate it to energy, well, we can project and anthropomorphize onto that as well. And that's what people have done for a long time, even without this knowledge, in terms of when you go back to a prime cause, a first mover, or a source and origin, you think of something related to you that is not you, but or that is you, since the I am is everyone in the pure consciousness, pure awareness aspect of looking at our subjectivity. But again, subjectivity is subjectivity, and so even though everyone can experience a state of pure consciousness, pure awareness, does that mean that that's an evidence for God, that God is that pure awareness source that we come from? I don't know. But it is known that consciousness in our material physicality reality of the four dimensions, that does come about through a necessity of the organic components in a body vehicle that will produce electrochemical processes, and you require a brain, and then that will animate through the production, through the components, the arrangement and coordination of the components produces a physical body of an organic nature that has a brain, and through that you have electrochemical processes that involve the brain in order for what emerges from the brain, which is consciousness or mind, etc., to control that body vehicle through electrochemical processes, just like things change in reality that don't have consciousness, expressive capabilities within them, and free will, like animals do. Well, there's chemical processes that are occurring, and things change. This is what happens in fire, this is what happens in plants, this is what happens in everything in reality, in the sun. So you can look at everything as being alive, everything is having consciousness, but again, this is a projection of ourselves onto everything else, because we're trying to understand things in relation to ourselves and in relation to reality we already understand. So my point is, we need to go back to the basics. My whole understanding in the past few months is I've always tried to stay grounded to reality, but through the influences of Mark Passio and other people and other things and other concepts, well, everything that inputs into us has an influence upon us. That's how things work. Even if we're not aware of it, everything has an influence. So we are influenced by what other people say, and we need to take the time to ground things back down to reality, always, because we're being inducted with a belief, with a concept. Is it true? Do you just believe it's true because it sounds good, it makes sense, it fills in the fear from that hole of an unanswered question, the unknown, the fear of the unknown? So if you don't have the answer, it's an unknown, and you have some aspect of fear, insecurity, doubt, discomfort. So we need to ground things back down to reality through deduction of the inducted universal general concepts. We need to verify them back down to reality. So this is what I've been doing with natural law in the past few months, and I found a lot of errors in the way people conceive of natural law. Anyways, I'll get into that in my next work project, but my point is we need to really get back down to reality. We need to really get back grounded to reality and not get lost in the other seven dimensions or in the quantum field, which far too many people are doing in New Age bullshit and pseudo-spirituality. And they're just inventing from the fantasies of minds, inducting beliefs and concepts through analogy and metaphor and correspondence that don't have any basis in actual reality that we live in. Saying, oh, everything's energy, reality doesn't exist. People believe whatever they want to believe because they don't ground things back into the physical reality we actually live in, which is here in this reality. We don't live in other realities. We don't live in the quantum world. But people dissociate from where they actually are and try to make sense of where they are based on other places. So people get lost in inner subjectivity and induced states of consciousness where they think they're experiencing things that may or may not be real, or you have astral projection that can be, you know, reproduced in a laboratory through brain stimulus, and a bunch of things can be reproduced that don't actually, that people think are real because they experience it subjectively in their inner world, right? Because you have subjective reality, which is a multiverse. I've explained this in recent articles. This multiverse you have is a parallel processing to the objective universe in reality, where you can imagine anything. You can create multiple scenarios that never actually existed. You can imagine anything. It's a world of imagination, a subjective reality. And in this subjective reality, you can have experiences that aren't real, but then you take them as real. But these experiences can also be reproduced without direct subjectivity of, say, meditation or other altered states, and just through stimulus of the brain, which is in control of consciousness in this vehicle, in our body vehicles, as I've been explaining. So you can induce all these things that people say are real, but are not real because it's just in the subjective multiverse of the imaginal realm of the mind. So something, you know, everyone believes that whatever their subjective experience is, and then they're going to relate it as reality because they do not understand the differences between what is possible, probable, and actual. Which is why I actually started this introduction. Sorry, we're 40 minutes in. But it's important to understand we need to ground things back down in reality into what is actual, rather than get lost in the speculation and the imagination of our phantasmal world of our subjective multiverse, which is trying to parallel process with reality. But a lot of times we get out of sync and we imagine things that aren't in reality. And then we're projecting that unreality into reality, and we think it's reality, but it's not grounded in reality. It's just speculation. It's a belief. It's an analogy, a metaphor, a correspondence, a way of generating a concept in order to make sense of things that we don't have an answer to, that we want an answer to, because we're trying to find meaning in things in our lives, in ourselves, and in the universe that we don't have an answer to, or we're trying to find an answer to, or maybe even your question is baseless and useless to even ask. You're asking a question for something that doesn't even matter. That happens a lot. So my point is, get back grounded in reality. Stop believing whatever the hell you want to believe and trace things back down to reality. Whatever concept, universal general concept or idea you have, take the time and make sure it traces back to reality. that it's actually grounded and not a free-floating belief where you just have concepts that are generated from other concepts, and then they create this false correspondence, and all you have is a free-floating belief in your mind that has very loose, tenuous, or non-existent correspondence to data sets in reality. You have one or two points, but it's not even an accurate representation because you're creating a whole superstructure of 10,000 aspects or 100 things, and you're correlating them, but they're only tied to like 2, 3, 4, 5 things in reality. And it's also, it can be a misunderstanding of things in reality because we don't understand that aspect of reality enough, and it's already corresponded with things we do understand. But through that correspondence, through that analogy and metaphor, we don't create an accurate representation or model, and then we create other beliefs based on that faulty model, and it's just like the straight path, and then you go off a path and one fork, and then you create another fork, and another fork in the road, and another fork in the road, and then after 5 iterations, well, instead of being straight on the 0 degree, you end up being, 90 degrees or 120 degrees off, and you end up going in the wrong direction. It's like, whoa, well, how did I end up here? Well, you're not grounding it in reality. Reality is the 0 degrees, and we're going off into speculation, belief, and concepts that we're not grounding back in reality. So people they don't understand the difference between possible, probable, and actual. And I've done a presentation. I have an infographic on perception, reality versus perception, involving cognitive dissonance. And this is also the fear of the unknown, the discomfort in ideas, and we want an answer. We want an answer to make sense of things, to make us feel special, to make us feel important, and this ties into the self-image and the self-concept, which I've talked about before, and how we're induced with images. The concepts and ideas and universals are images in our mind that we attach to ourselves. We get attached to them because they make us feel good, or they provide a sense of comfort, a sense of meaning to our self-concept, even to our ego personality identity construct of the self-concept, the self-image, our sense of self, or our worldview, the sense of reality, how we envision reality. So they provide answers, and then we get attached to these beliefs because of the images in our minds and the induced states that they make us feel. And then we have cognitive dissonance in trying to let go of them because we are attached to them as an aspect of understanding reality and ourselves. So we don't want to let go of these beliefs. That's why you always have to detach from yourself, dissociate and detach from how you need things to be, and just look at reality as it is. People have a hard time doing this. So I have the visual presentation using a bunch of infographics about reality and how we're failing to process reality correctly because we're not grounding it in reality, and we're stuck in speculative belief, and we're stuck in the inducted, summoned images that dark occultists, image sorcerers inculcate in our minds. And a big one is TV. TV shapes reality for you. People believe everything on TV. TV becomes reality. You know, it's been done, I forget, it was the 30s, but in Wells, I forget the guy, famous writer, but The War of the Worlds, whoever wrote that, and they did the radio show, and at the beginning of the radio, they said this is just a story. And then they were recounting the story on the radio, but people thought it was the end of the world. Even though you look outside and it's not happening, right? It's not happening in the world. But they thought it was real because they had trust, blind belief, blind faith that the radio would tell them the truth because that was their source for knowledge of reality. Just like TV is now. And now people believe, oh my God, the measles, it's such a big problem. Well, is it reality? No. Oh, Ebola, H1N1, all these things. It's just terrorism, the thing in France, Aurora shooting, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, everything is crisis actors. It's generated reality through images. So you see how images that come into your mind, you take them as reality. It doesn't have to be on television. It can be spoken to you, which is why the influence of words can change your perception of reality, because you just believe it. It sounds good. It fills in a void. It fills in a hole of the uncertainty, the unknown, the fear of that, the doubt, the discomfort. So it provides you with an answer, even though it might be bullshit, It generates an understanding of reality, and then you just accept it because you have blind faith and belief. You don't think for yourself. This is why everyone is an automaton, robot in stimulus response. They don't do processing. No one's engaging in the proper aspects of the trivium method and in our aspects of consciousness and thinking things through. So we're all just believing whatever we're fed. We're being invoked and summoned with images, either through the television, through the radio, or whatever frequency of speech and images that people provide. So the radio is speech, television is speech and images, and people can talk to us and tell us things. We can read a book, we can read a narrative, we can read a story, and then we can hear metaphors and analogies, and we can take them as literal reality. And when we have subjective experiences in our inner reality of the multiverse, this does produce images in our mind, and we can take those inner experiences and project them onto reality and say, well, this is how reality works, because I had this personal experience, and that's my experience, and it's not your experience, so screw you, and this is how reality is, because I want to believe it to be, because that's my own personal experience. So you see how subjectivity becomes reality for pretty much everyone on the planet? It doesn't matter what's objective and how we can discourse and figure things out by grounding it in reality. Everyone just wants to believe whatever they want because they have their own personal experience, and that experience dictates what reality is. So in their experience, well, they might have had an out-of-body experience, or they might have the awareness in an altered state of the pure awareness and the pure quote pure awareness and quote pure consciousness, because it's not consciousness as it relates to the human body. It's another aspect of consciousness devoid of any association with ourselves. It's just a pure state of awareness. And then we project, anthropomorphize, and personify that as an I, because it's in a subjective experience of us as an I, so we can only reference it as an I, and we think that's the true I. But it just might, as I've been conceptualizing, that is actually source, quote source, quote God, quote pure awareness, quote pure consciousness, quote all one, all that. And that's the, you know, the pure, it could be the pure energy aspect of consciousness, which would be the prime cause, prime mover, which isn't an I. That's why God in the Bible is creating problems in people conceptually, because images are being induced into their minds where they believe God is like a personified figure when it isn't, because it's, again, metaphors and analogies. People try to make sense of things, and then they personify, project, and anthropomorphize things through themselves, because it's all subjective projection of unreality in our minds into reality. When you look at things detached from ourselves, well, it could be that, okay, there might be a pure energy field, the singularity, and that could be pure consciousness, as I've been relating it to the body. In order for consciousness to work in the body, you have to have electrochemical signals, which is what happens in matter as well. You know, chemical processes and emergent phenomena and emergent things that weren't there, but because molecules interact, well, they exchange things and new things happen. Greater complexity, etc. So we need to get out of other dimensions, get out of astral projection, get out of meditation where you can go in la-la land and imagine whatever you want to imagine, because it's a subjective inner phantasmal realm of induced states of consciousness, and get back into reality. And sure, you can conceptually think of a prime cause, a first mover, and then that would be the energy singularity, and that's the source, and that's why we correspond the aspects of science with ancient mysticism and all this stuff, as because we're trying to understand things again, and it could be right, it could be false, but it's a concept. It's not a reality. It's not based in reality. Is it? Can you measure consciousness? Or you can measure the effects of consciousness in the body, electrochemical signals, but you can't measure consciousness coming in, you can't measure consciousness coming out, because consciousness comes from within. Now this is where I'm going to re-listen to the part 4 of the Post-Human World by Marco Tsarion, because I remember him mentioning how the self comes from the body. And I had misinterpreted his understanding as, well, he's actually talking about the ego personality identity construct, which is a result of our existence from birth to death, and how we are conditioned from our environment and people around us, and how we can recondition ourselves to become a different personality, a different person, have a different identity. We can change ourselves because we're shapeshifter chameleons, as I've mentioned in Character and Our Character, like the clay, where you can engrave things on. Well, we are like clay, which can engrave things on because we are a blank state. That's why I corresponded as well in the concept to the pure awareness, pure consciousness, quote consciousness, because we are, that is what develops in us, and I was relating it to an emergent property phenomenon from the prime causal force of energy, which creates energy at one, which is the pure source, all one, identical thing at one level, and then that progresses to an energy field, and then from there we build up. So even in that concept, God would be at the lowest point, not at the highest point. It would be the highest frequency. It would be the culmination, the all base foundational level, like the base of a pyramid. But then you build up things as you go up. And in terms of the infinite field and the infinite scope, well, it's the largest base as well. And then as you go up, the more you organize things, well, that's where the grouping comes from, because in the implicate order, where it's a symmetry order, it's an order of things evenly displaced everywhere. Because if you have just an all-one pure energy, well, there's not one thing in one place and another thing in another place. It's just everything is evenly displaced, whatever it is, if it's just pure energy. So it's just, it's the all-one, everything, everywhere, infinite. And then from there, well, it finites, and you get to subatomic particles, and then atomic particles, and atoms, and molecules, and then it progresses into greater complexity, and at the point where you have the organic structure that creates brains, and then you have, through the emergence of brains, you have the emergent property of consciousness, which can be a result of the source consciousness progressing through evolution and greater complexity in order to allow an individuation of that all-one pure awareness, pure consciousness to emerge as an individuation in that physical body vehicle that is produced as a result of being a certain complexity and a certain evolved capacity to have a brain in order for consciousness to emerge. If you don't have a brain, take out a brain, there's no consciousness. This is how it works in all the organic bodies. And it's, as I said, go look into the analogy of the radio TV receiver. It's very faulty. It doesn't apply. People use it without thinking, and that's just because, again, correspondence, metaphor, analogy, convenient way to make sense of things and provide an answer, and it makes us feel good and how special we are, and oh, we're God and all that stuff. But again, it's a faulty analogy. So in my new understanding, as I've been tracing things back to reality, I have been developing more of a grounded understanding based in reality rather than an ungrounded understanding based in the fantasy of my concepts and the imaginal realm of my subjective reality of the multiverse, where I can imagine anything I want and then project that outwards and create reality from the unreality. But it doesn't make it reality. It just makes me believing whatever I want to believe. People don't understand how our minds work in psychology and how we can believe whatever we want to believe, and we need to understand the aspects of possible, probable, and actual. So you start from reality, where you have actual things, and then from connecting things in reality, from tracing things in reality, well, then the visionary quest to wisdom, right? Then you'll actually gain an understanding of reality. You'll have knowledge in reality, which provides you with an accurate understanding of reality, and then you'll gain wisdom to act in reality in the right way. Because you want to act in reality in the right way, based on the speculation and the concepts of your mind that are not representative in reality, well, good luck with that. You do not need to accept any... You don't need the concept of God as espoused by any religion, or even as a concept that I understand it, in order to be moral, in order to create true freedom and peace on this planet. People want to believe, oh, you need to accept God. No, you don't. I was in Roman Catholic education school since I was very young, and I went to the three of the seven virtues in the Catholic stupid religion. You know, there's the baptism, and there's a confirmation and communion. It's all a bunch of bullshit, and you know, another one's you got to get married, and there's all these other things, the stupid virtues of retardedness that people invent out of their mind, and other people are stupid enough to believe, because it doesn't trace back to reality. It's just belief and makes you feel special, because these are all rituals and how to attain the afterlife and how to be good and how to get get immortality and get into the afterlife, and then there's other ones on how to be resurrected and how, oh, we just get resurrected, because it's all a way to make sense of good and evil and how to evolve and how to better ourselves. But it's all speculation, it's all belief in our mind, it's not tied back in reality. It just makes us feel good about ourselves. It makes us provide an answer to questions where we have a fear of the unknown and a discomfort and an uncertainty and an insecurity. Well, then we get the security and, well, the false security and the false comfort through believing whatever we want to believe. That's the power of the subjective mind. That's the power of images. I guess I ranted enough. Anyways, there's a lot of stuff. It's all over the place in how it ties into, you know, possible conceptions and correspondences, as I've been saying. You can correspond the source and energy, and you can say that's consciousness, and you can relate it to, well, the subjective inner reality of how we experience a pure awareness and pure consciousness, and then project that, anthropomorphize and personify it as an I. When it's not an I, it would just be everyone, because it's all that pure consciousness. You can look at the source of energy and the singularity as that, and then that comes into the since it's pure energy, well, that would be the foundation before the pure field, or maybe it is the pure field, and then that becomes the subatomic particles, etc., 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 and then we evolve. So looking back, we're at the pinnacle of the sphere. What is before us is a devolutionary in terms of a backwards direction, because it's foundational, and we don't we come from there, but that's not where we're going. So it's devolution. It's the wrong direction. That's entropy. It's where nothing is. Nothing exists. It's symmetry order, pure energy. There's nothing. It's just pure awareness. There's no existence. There's nothing. There's no frame of reference. You have to have a frame of reference, which is why in the subjective states of inner states of consciousness, and those inner states of consciousness, you need a reference to yourself, which is why you call it the I awareness, because it's always a reference to yourself because of the subjectivity. So without a frame of reference, you can't have an I. Frame of reference is your subjectivity. That's where the I comes from. That's what you're projecting onto that experience, because it's just a subjective experience. Without your subjective experience and reference to you, well, you can't even say it's an I. So it would just be actually pure awareness and pure consciousness. So people aren't referencing that properly either. And the pure awareness, pure consciousness, pure energy state of the source, singularity, that doesn't have any object of reference. It has nothing around it. It's just pure energy. That's all it is in that singularity mode. And that would be no I. There's no identity. It's just identicalness. That's why there's the two levels of identity. One is identity, where we have identification. We have ID cards because we're one and not another. But when you have in the pure oneness, well, that's not an identity. It's just one identical thing. It doesn't have a frame of reference. There's no variability, multiplicity, and diversity in order for an identity to be formed. That's how identities are formed, is in the variability, multiplicity, and diversity of individuation. You do not have an identity when you are the all-one, which is the pure consciousness, which would be the source for our consciousness, as some people envision, through a subjective awareness, subjective states of awareness of how they dissociate from themselves, and then all that's left when you remove the ego personality identity from conditioning from birth until death, all you are left with is just pure consciousness and pure awareness, which would be the actual emergent state of from our brains, from our bodies, because you can't have the consciousness in reality without the organic body vehicle and the brain in order to produce the brain and have electrochemical processes in order to experience reality through the body. You wouldn't have an experience, you wouldn't have a consciousness, you wouldn't even be in this reality, you wouldn't even exist. So again, tie things back down to reality, or you're going to get lost. You can have speculations and concepts and beliefs, but do not call them reality, do not call them actual, do not say you know it, do not say it's 100% certain, because it isn't. It's a speculation, it's a belief. And the more you're attached to it, the more it's going to take you away from reality, the more it's going to take you away from grounding yourself in an accurate understanding of where we are that leads to the wisdom of right action. Because you'll delve into speculation, and then you'll validate things based on that speculation and belief rather than validating things based on reality that actually is. So it's fine to have beliefs and speculations, but when you start leading your life based on them, then you go down the wrong path. And look at where we are. Everyone doesn't think for themselves. Everyone believes whatever they want to believe. And then we have conflicting ideologies and conflicting ways of living, because everything's based on the subjective reality and subjective experience, and whatever people experience, well, they create that in as the actual in reality, but it's simply subjective and it's not a reality, it's an unreality in their subjective mind that might be a reflection of reality but isn't, but they don't care about whether it actually matches up with reality, whether their concepts are grounded in reality, they just project it as reality. So there's no possible, probable, or actual. Everything just becomes actual. Whatever comes from the imagination of the phantasmal realm of mind, they make it reality. They believe whatever they want. That's the problem with the world. People don't know how to think. They don't know how to process reality. Everything is based in reality. Everything comes back to reality. Everything is grounded in reality. We, in reality, in the four dimensions of three space and one time, where syntropy exists to create complexity. Before that, lower levels, pure energy, it's simplicity, there's no complexity, there's no evolution, it's reverse of evolution. So this is why people are attached to the beliefs, well, when you start to think of the purpose of existence, I say refrain from thinking of that, because you're going to want to accept things like ascension and transcendence and evolution into a pure being of light and all these other fantasies that make you feel good because of the darkness and the fear of the uncertainty and the unknown and the insecurity and discomfort that not having that answer for the question of what's the purpose of existence. Oh, I've thought about it a lot, and originally it got me down nihilism and solipsism. And the way to get back out of that is to get back grounded in reality and stay out of the speculative necessity to have an answer to a speculative question that doesn't need to be asked in order to do things properly. You want to create right? You want to create in the wisdom of right action? You do not need to have an answer of, oh, what's the purpose of the universe? And why does the universe exist? And where are we going? These are answers you can't even have. You can speculate about them, but if you're going to make them actual and you're going to live your life based on these imaginations from your mind or imaginations from other people that they inculcate and invoke and summon images in you that you then believe because they provide an answer and make you feel good about your position in the universe and about yourself and about where we're headed, rather than not have an answer. People want to have answers. It's a deep yearning. And when you can't have it, oh, well, there's the insecurity, there's the doubt, there's the discomfort, there's the fear of the unknown. So every time I think about the purpose, it brings me to a dark place. Because you can't find the answer. So I don't spend my time thinking about the purpose of the universe and the purpose of humanity and why we exist and why things evolved and why. You can think of a million why questions that you can't have the answer to. And you want to invent an answer to and believe whatever you want? Well, I'm just warning you that you're going down a dark path. The real dark path. You want to claim that I'm going down a dark path because I don't accept in this concept of an intermediary soul thing that's responsible for the generation of our consciousness as a in our body vehicle, that's the radio television receiver, and the soul is who we really are. Well, no, I call that bullshit, because it doesn't hold any water to me. Even in my conception of God and everything and the source of everything, I don't need that. I've explained where it comes from. From the source energy to the source field to the subatomic and everything, and then eventually, when you have the greater evolutionary complexity, then consciousness can manifest from that source pure consciousness as an individuation of consciousness that then forms its own identity based on being born and existing within conditional parameters of the multiplicity, diversity, and variability of things that exist in the universe, where there's relative interaction, where the environment influences us, our parents influence us, everything influences us to become who we are as an ego personality identity construct, and that's where the real identity is, and apart from that, there is no identity. Because the pure consciousness, pure quote consciousness, pure quote awareness at the source, well, that's just the one, the all, the identical. It's not a bunch of trillions and trillions of identities that coalesce to form one. That's just a belief you have in your mind. Again, anthropomorphizing, projecting, and whatever the third word I was using. Personification. Just like what was done in the past through symbolism. All the gods are all personifications. They're allegorical, metaphorical story narratives in order to try to explain aspects of reality through a story, through colorful symbolism, through imagery. So you get imagery in your mind and you think of things and it allows you to understand one thing in relation to another, which is the purpose of the whole four elements. It's to understand ourselves and how we generate in reality. And then it gets bastardized over time and centuries and millennia. And then even though the Egyptians might have started or the Atlanteans or whatever, and ancient civilizations, well, it goes down and down, just like I was saying at the beginning of this audio. The telephone line, the information gets diluted and perverted, and then instead of understanding symbolic allegories and narratives and stories in order to illustrate and elucidate through imagery, the science of imagery and symbols, aspects of reality to greater understand ourselves through reference to other things, we take it literally and then we create false correspondences, false analogies, which provide us with answers that we didn't, well, answers to things that don't exist, really. Like, the four elements, that's the foundation for all of reality. Yeah, that's what all the atoms and everything, all the trees and all the water and all the rocks, it all comes from the four elements. Well, that's people who didn't understand the original purpose that the symbols were created for and what the narrative stories and analogies and allegories and parables were explaining about reality and ourselves and how they mirrored it. But it wasn't a literal thing. It wasn't a literal explanation. People get confused in literal and parabolic and allegorical and metaphorical, and they take things as literal because the images come into your mind and then you take that as a personal experience, whether real or not, in your subjective reality, which is why the inner states of subjectivity and the multiverse, well, people go into induced states of consciousness and they take that experience as the objective reality. So we need to delineate between possible, probable, and actual and get back grounded in reality. I hope I'm making my point. I've talked for an hour. I haven't even started the article, but it's a very important thing. Maybe I'm just going to post this as a separate thing, which I think I will do. It's not going to be on the article anymore. I'm going to start a new one on the article. So I just had to clear that up on where my understanding of reality is going based on an actual grounding in reality rather than the fantasy of the multiverse of my attempt to process parallelly to reality but failing because, you know, we just believe whatever we want and accept whatever conceptions that provide us with a sense of security and an answer to a question. So as long as other people can't answer our questions, well, we're going to desperately hold on to beliefs. We're going to remain attached to our beliefs, to our concepts, which are not grounded in reality, just because, well, someone can't answer it in another way, and we need an answer. We're desperately holding on to an answer. So unless you can answer my question, well, I'm not going to let go of my belief. I'm going to believe it's the reality. I'm going to say it's 100% certain. I'm going to say I know it, because, again, you're attached to belief. You can't let go of it. So that's all people have to do to remain ignorant, is say that, well, if you can't answer my question, or if you can't answer the question in a better way than this model, this belief, this conception provides me with an answer to alleviate my insecurity, my discomfort, my doubt, and my fear of the unknown, well, then I'm going to willingly remain attached to it because I need to feel good, and I don't like to be uncertain about things. Why can't people just admit, I don't know? I do that a lot. That's why I call things conceptions and I call things related to truth and the transcendental being. I'm relating them to conceptions delineated from things that we can actually verify, such as the states of consciousness, you know, thoughts, emotions, actions, and the way the trivium method work. All that work I've been doing is actually grounded in reality, and I've been trying to correspond it to conceptions of a transcendental being through aspects of reality we can verify. You know, truth, love, good, right, morality. We can understand love as the expansive force of consciousness through a conscious awareness of reality. And reality is what matters. Again, the groundedness of reality is what allows us to expand consciousness. You don't expand consciousness through a phantasmal imagination of your subjective reality, doing as much meditation as you want, astral projection, remote viewing, channeling whatever subjective inner states of reality will not get you to evolve consciousness, because you're not gaining a conscious awareness of reality. You're not creating more connections in your brain in order to have you expand your conscious awareness of reality, and you're not creating a correspondence between the aspects of your brain that develops, because you can damage your brain, and guess what?